This is Austin, and you are listening to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Wednesday, February 5th, 2014. Carla L. Rucker is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL Research from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end, we have two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. Together, they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Rucker and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody with us and ready to go?
One here.
Yes, indeed.
Here and ready.
Oh, good. Hey, Gary.
Welcome to the show, Gary.
Wanting to say just a tad about a couple of things coming up. We got a couple of gatherings coming up I'm excited about. The first one, Austin is producing, and it is offered by Therese Gonzalez, an incredible healing intuitive who did work with me, and I was incredibly impressed with her. And she has volunteered to offer her balancing along the lines of the Law of One, which fit in with, she found that they fit in perfectly with her material, which she has been teaching for more than 30 years. And so she bound the two together. And it's incredible. It's just incredible for those of you who love the Law of One and want to work on yourself, want to balance yourself, heal yourself. Oh, I can't say enough good about that. It will take place in Louisville, and it will be very exciting. And then there is another one, a completely different conversation, really, about the archetypes in Book 4 of the Law of One, a discussion led by our own Sephi, Sephira Vox. Sephi has been a philosopher for many years. As young as he has devoted his entire student and adult life to philosophy of a certain type, which is the same type as the Law of One. And so he is fascinated, absolutely riveted by the archetypes, and he wants to share what he has found so far about the archetypes from working with those of Ra. I think the conversation is going to be incredibly stimulating, and it's going to take place on a farm, so that you can enjoy the country and homemade food, and I mean really homemade, good, yummy food, and the company of incredible people. This I can all guarantee. And I think Sephira is going to be an excellent team leader for the conversation, for leading the conversation. I recommend both of them. And Austin, how do you get in? Find out more about joining up on these?
Anybody who wants to learn more information can visit our Bring Forth homepage at bringforth.org, and there are links for both of those under the news section. And before we jump into the opening riff, I'd like to address the caller from area code 856. We're going to do the opening riff, and then once we're done with that, if you're still with us, we can get to you and take your question. Today's opening riff comes from a Kuo session on March 24th, 1996. It is the business of humankind to experience and to bear witness to that experience. This is confusing to those who desire to become perfect, for it is not our way to hunger after perfection. Rather, it is our feeling that is the depth and quality of perception that is the desirable quality. The seeker of truth can be seen as that witness which makes the fallen tree make a sound. It is the tenuous, half-grasped witness of the imperfect entity that is precious to the infinite creator, not the polished conclusion of a scholar or aesthete, but rather the diamond in the rough, if you will, of the person as it is, bearing witness to that catalyst which has struck it. Therefore, it is not important to create perfect responses. It is important to allow the most deep-felt truth of one's being to thrive.
Thank you, Austin. When I was a kid, I tried so hard to do things right because I wanted my parents' approval. I would try so very hard. And I remember coming home with a report card that had all A's and one B. And I thought that was, you know, pretty good, and I was hoping for a compliment. And my dad looked at it and said, "What's with this B?" He was not satisfied. It wasn't good enough. Nothing I ever did was good enough. I was standing on a chair and cooking when I was 7. I was babysitting at that age. I couldn't even pick up my brother, but I was responsible for him. If thing went wrong, it was on me. It scared me to death. But there I was, and my folks looked at, not for what I did well, even though it was way out of my age range, but for any mistake I might make. A childhood was an endless series of, "Well, that's not bad. But you know what you could have done to make this really good?" And then I'd hear about it. I don't ever remember getting a compliment, not when I sang, not when I danced, not when I worked around the house. And I did work around the house. I was little mother, actually. My parents were performers, and they expected me to run the house while they performed. It was that background that led me to pick this, because I have had an issue in my life of thinking that I'm not worthy. I'm just not good enough. Anytime I make a mistake, I hear that voice saying, "Not good enough, not worthy." And yes, I know it's not my voice, it's my parents' voice. I know that intellectually. But does that really help me spiritually to let go of all that burden? No. It doesn't help at all. I carry a burden that I keep thinking I have finally let go of, and then I'll hear that voice again, "Not good enough, not worthy." And I feel struck to the heart. I feel heartbroken again and again. Good enough. I didn't do it right. I didn't see it well. You know? All those things. I don't know how your childhood went. I don't know what the voices in your head say to you. But for very many of us, there are voices there that just simply say you're unworthy. You're not good enough. And it's hard to go through life with that kind of background in your head. It's difficult to shake it, to shake free of it, and to accept yourself as imperfect as you are. I finally, at the recommendation of a man who helped me tremendously with this, he sent it to me, a Raggedy Ann doll. He says, "You've never had a childhood." He said, "I want you to love that child that you were and take that child and hold it to your breast and rock it and tell that child you love it till you finally feel loved." And for years I carried that doll wherever I went, parties, church, it didn't matter. I had that doll with me, and I loved that doll, and I rocked it and held it to me. And it really helped a lot. I think that it cured me as much as anything has ever come close to curing that feeling of unworthiness. No, I'm not worthy. No, I'm not perfect. But you know what? It's okay. It's really okay. Because that's not my job. They say, it is the business of humankind to experience and bear witness to that experience. They say further, it is our feeling that it is the depth and quality of perception that you're looking for. The seeker of truth is not looking for an A on his paper. He's looking for a deeply felt reality, a subjective reality. It is a tenuous, half-grasped witness of the imperfect entity that is precious to the infinite creator, says Google. We can do that. We can half grasp and have a tenuous hold on the things that we perceive from now until the day we die, no problem, gently perceiving. We're constantly thinking, analyzing, looking, feeling, sensing, intuiting, having a hunch about things. And that is what we're supposed to be doing here. Get it right. We're just supposed to be paying attention. What the Creator is hoping we will not do is be indifferent. The Creator is hoping that we will remain vulnerable so that as we move through life, we are engaged with it. We are engaged with our people and with the people in our lives. We are willing to be touched by them. And we are willing to go deep with them if that is their desire. Oh, how often we have that sense of joy that comes and fleetingly goes, almost too quick to catch, always in the middle of things, there and then gone, like the butterfly that we four were talking about at lunch the other day, that touches us with its beauty and then flies away. Let us be touched. Let us be open. Let us bear witness. Amen.
Thank you, Carla. It looks like our live caller has departed. Just a reminder to anybody else calling in, if you'd like to ask a question on the air, press 1, and that will prompt us to cue you into the show. So we can go ahead and get started with our questions submitted off the air. Our first question comes from Mark from the Bring Forth Forums. Mark asks, what is the role of the positively polarized person in regards to activism? For instance, should one just accept the actions of a controlling negative action hurting another being, or should one stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves and fight against an exploitative agenda? Take, for example, the civil rights movement in the past and parallel that with our current environmental issues. Martin Luther King Jr. had a letter he wrote discussing how the biggest hindrance to justice was not the few extremists, but rather the many people who are accepting of the extremists' actions. How do you see this issue and the framework of polarizing positively and accepting actions that are not consonant with the law of one? That's a pretty meaty question.
It certainly is. And I think that for most of us, we don't, at least we feel that we probably don't do enough to bring justice to our world. How do you do that? Do you write a letter to the editor? Do you find a local issue that you can really get involved in and, you know, that really impinges upon your life personally, and then just give it all you've got? I think a lot of it depends on how you feel, you know, what you're drawn to. Some people are drawn to activism and want to live a life that responds to those questions. People are not drawn to that life for whatever reason, and I do not think that I can say that they're wrong. I think that I can just say that we all have to follow our bliss, as who said that? Follow
Joseph
our
Campbell.
Bliss. Huh?
Joseph Campbell?
Yeah, Joseph Campbell said that. And what is following our bliss? Jim, you were a fairly radical activist for about 15 minutes when you were a kid in high school, in college, and in the country too, and did some genuinely helpful things with the people around you. For instance, you started a co-op and helped to lead it until there were, how many people were there in that co-op?
In our local co-op, there were probably a couple of dozen people. And then around Kentucky, in the Federation of Ohio River Co-ops, was five different states, and there were probably 200, different co-ops, and that was a really good way to become socially active because it involved the food production and transportation, sales and consumption, and, you know, an attempt to live a healthy life to support people who were growing healthy food, and then to get together for making the orders and talking about other things that might be going on at the same time. It just lent an air of awareness and activism to the people that participated. And I know lots of people are still doing that these days, and I think that's a really good place. It's a style of life that you choose to live.
And you don't do that anymore. Why is that?
Well, yeah, really, I don't do it as much as I would like to, I guess. I try to shop more sensibly and go places that have food I like to eat.
Right, we buy Whole Foods.
Don't really know of any co-ops like Federation in the area anymore, but I have continued to do things that I felt were socially responsible, you know, supporting causes that come close to my heart, and live a style of life that allows us to do, you know, what we're doing right now, talking to people on the radio and being able to send out information that will hopefully be helpful on their spiritual journeys, feeling that it's inspired us, that it might inspire others. I think you do what you can. You can't do it all. And the old Pete Seeger axiom was to think globally and act locally and just do what you can.
I think that's a good point that you just brought up, that you do what you feel to do. And not everybody feels to do the same thing or identifies it in the same way. Austin, what do you think?
Well, the question kind of reminds me of a particular Ra quote that I think is often kind of misinterpreted or confused. So I'll read the quote and then see if we can pick it apart. I think it works well with what you just said. Ra says, "Those most active in attempting to remake or alter the society are those working from feelings of being correct personally or of having answers which will put power in a more correct configuration. This may be seen to be a full travel from negative to positive orientation." I think that part's key because it's saying that's not a negative thing. It can be negative or positive to do that. Either will activate these energy ray centers. There are some few whose desires to aid society are of a green ray nature or above. These entities, however, are few due to the understanding, may we say, of fourth ray that universal love freely given is more to be desired than principalities or even the rearrangement of peoples or political structures. I think that that gets confused because some people interpret that to mean that since those whose desire to aid society of a green ray nature might be more advanced than those who desire to aid society in a yellow ray nature. And I don't necessarily think that's true. I think it's just basically a matter of perspective and being. Like you two were just saying, do what you feel is right. If you sort of, if you read that it's green ray to love instead of to act upon society, but you feel you should act upon society and you ignore that feeling because you want to be green ray, you're ultimately ignoring your true self, and that will cause more imbalance than otherwise. So acting upon your desire to be an activist, I think, is a totally polarizing thing. A positive entity also has a strong functioning yellow ray center. And Ross says, in order for a positive entity to completely unblock yellow ray, they have to wish all those in relationship to it joy, love, comfort. And so a entity who feels that towards society and works to make society support those in relationship to it and feel as though society should offer the joy and love and comfort of those around it, I think is acting in a positively polarizing manner. Gary, do you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's a whopper of a question, and likewise, typical me, I have a whopper of an answer. I agree with what you're saying, Austin, and the use of that particular quote. I had considered including that one as well, and what Jim and Carla were saying, that yeah, you have to follow what you perceive is best. And green ray activity, if that's not what you're feeling, isn't necessarily better than yellow ray. It's what suits your particular constitution and your desires, and there's no wrongness in following your desires. Austin, before I launch into my full initial reply, did you want to examine that particular quote any further?
No, I was just wanted to touch on the fact that some people interpret that as being of the green ray nature of aiding society as being more advanced or more proper than yellow ray. So I think you just kind of said that too.
That occurred to me while you were talking. On the word advanced, I would contend that, you know, green ray is more advanced than yellow ray, just like blue ray is more advanced than green ray, just like someone who is 20 years old is more advanced in age than someone who's 10. I focus on the second part of what you said when you said that green ray is more proper than yellow ray. I agree there. We should remove any judgments of worth of which one is better or lesser, but I think advanced does have bearing here, is a proper word if judgment is removed from the word.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So in response to Mark's really good question, I would agree on the basic point that that he made through quoting or referring to Martin Luther King, and that's that the success of the service to self agenda is only in part dependent on the actions of those of service to self. What permits that STS agenda to take root here and to become policy or become the way we as a culture live in certain respects is, like Martin Luther King was saying, the silence of those who don't share that service to self agenda, or at least the absence of a big collective no. Maybe not active resistance in the outward sense, but nevertheless the absence of people saying no. The same argument has been made about Nazi Germany, that what allowed the Nazis to have their day was the lack of the German populace rising up and saying, no, you can't do this, sorry. It's captured succinctly in a quote that's attributed to Edmund Burke that says, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. And there's multiple places where MLK echoes the same thing. And so, personally, this is a question that I've struggled with as well. So where I would like to begin my response to Mark or anyone else considering this topic is to bounce back the question to the person and ask them to consider what is the most potent and powerful or best, if you will, way to help others in all situations and in all times, whether it's whatever the case may be, activism or otherwise. And I think in consideration of that question, Ra gives us some insight. They say, in 17.2, it is impossible to help another being directly. It is only possible to make catalysts available in whatever form, the most important being, this is key, the radiation of realization of oneness with the Creator from the self, less important being information such as we share with you, less important being, you know, the raw material itself. So, what is radiation of realization of oneness? One quick way to describe that is to see it as the measure of your own spiritual development, your own awareness of your oneness with the Creator. And then the radiation part of that phrase is what the Confederation calls the service of being. And this touches on one of the principal tenets of the Law of One, which says that our most fundamental and powerful service happens simply by being, by radiating who we are. In one sense, this is an effortless service. Think of what helps me perceive of this and understand it is to think of a radioactive rock. And without doing anything in particular, that rock is sending off energy into its environment. Likewise with the radiation of realization of oneness. Before we lift a finger or before we speak a word or maybe even you might say before we breathe, energy is constantly and effortlessly emanating from us. It's what I've heard Carla describe as our vibratory signature. It's the energy of who we are. And then the deeper our conscious realization of oneness with the Creator, that is, the more we've released that individual identity and the more transparent we are to the Creator's love and light shining through us, the greater that service, the more powerful that service of being that Ra describes. Ra also indicates the same in 42.7. Don asks a question about feeding and being faced with a starving entity. And Don explores that situation by asking if a Blu-ray entity who saw the starving entity would not feed the entity because they would see that the starving being is experiencing their lessons and learning. And Ra says, well, this is incorrect. To a person which is starving, the appropriate response is the feeding of the body. You may extrapolate from this. Ra goes on to say, on the other hand, however, you are correct in your assumption that the green ray response is not as refined as that which is imbued with wisdom. The wisdom enables the entity to, this is the part I would highlight, appreciate its contribution to the planetary consciousness by the quality of its being without regard to activity or behavior, which expects results upon visible planes. So by what Ra describes as this contribution to the planetary consciousness, or in other words, the surface of being, we literally can change the atmosphere within which we live and die and have our incarnational existence. It's like the classic analogy of or metaphor of the light turning on in the darkness. Where there is light, there is not darkness. And the more we do that work of opening our hearts and humbling ourselves and seeking to serve others and realizing the Creator, what Ra calls the radiation of realization of oneness, the stronger that field is of light that emanates with us from us, I'm sorry, and the more we actually affect the planet. That's important to consider when, I think, when determining what role activism plays in the life. It's helpful to remember to detach for a moment from the desire to do something in an outward way and realize that by working on yourself, this is a tenet that Carla and the Confederation messages really helped me to understand. By working on yourself, you're allowing more light through you and you are changing the situation. Even if you're outwardly silent and you're not resisting the regime, you're still contributing to changing the planet. You can do that from a cave or from a couch. But there, nevertheless, there's still many minutes in a day and many days in a lifetime begging for outward active participation in the world in some way. So then this gets into the other category of service that the Confederation message has really helped me to understand, and that's the service of doing. And if you look around you, there's no shortage whatsoever of good work to do on this planet. But from this perspective, it's helpful to realize that the service of doing is just icing on the cake because it's the offspring of the service of being, which comes first and foremost. So if to echo what you guys have already said, if you feel called to activism, you know, by all means, or called to helping people in any other way, follow your heart, as Jim would say. But the Confederation would add, too, to do so without attachment to outcome, without expectation for results on the physical plane. Give your best effort and recognize the underlying perfection and wholeness and completeness of whatever happens to be unfolding in the moment. And just another 30 seconds for me to respond to the second half of Mark's question about how a positively polarized entity accepts the actions of others that are not consonant with the law of one. in my own life and many of those with any kind of heart sensitivity, there are certain actions that seem absolutely unacceptable and deplorable and even abhorrent. But in trying to relate to those actions, maybe instead of finding a way to condone the behavior or rationalize it per se, instead, try to find an awareness that is the Creator's. Rod says about that awareness, since unity contains all, it cannot abhor any. And Rod prefaces that statement with a note about the compassion with which unity is inherently imbued, that unity which cannot abhor anything because it contains everything. And I think it's helpful to consider that unity or the Creator outside of yourself, it's your true nature. It's who you really are, so that you literally contain everything. You contain those actions that you're having a difficult time accepting and relating to. It's part of your being. So then the goal then for the positive entity is to see the Creator in all beings, even those entities engaging in somewhat heinous or non-consonant actions. And in seeing the Creator, you see the perfection of what's unfolding. And further, if you feel the need to take action, you're doing so from that level, from that sort of freedom. You're not responding to the surface, but you're offering the most creative, the most love and light-oriented response to that situation. And you're helping to steer the situation to its highest good by loving it as it is, and then taking action if you need to, absolutely. And I think loving means total acquiescence to situations that need changed. And I would note to Mark, without reading them, that in addition to the quote that Austin offered, 67.11 is really good to consider, and 11 also is really good to consider in this question.
Jim McCarthy,
and that about
that. Add to that?
I think that we all have to face this in our own lives. I faced it as a young woman by wanting to share my folk songs with the world, to share my love through my folk songs. And then I found that I could do a better job sharing my love by sharing through channeling and teaching and doing the work that I'm doing today. And I did that, and I it would break my heart not to be able to be serving. I think that we have to figure out what we can do, and then we need to do it. I don't think it's okay to just sit by the sidelines and say, well, obviously I can't impinge on the, I can't do any real good here, so what's the point in trying? I think we can all do good, and some of us are gifted and can do a whole lot of good. I know it's dangerous to bring up political figures, but look at somebody like President Obama. He gave his whole life to be a community leader, to organize communities for the to do something about what they wanted to do something about. I mean, if there was something to be organized, he was in the business of being called upon. He was, you know, part of a group. I don't remember the name of it, but you went to this group and you explained what it is you were trying to do, and this person came to your community and tried to help organize the community in such a way that the community was pulling together for one cause, whether it was cleaning up a creek or whether it was cleaning up a town politic that had gotten sour, whatever it was. Obama did that for a living for many years, and I think, you know, probably some of his mistakes can be seen to be mistakes of a person who all of a sudden is able to do more than he ever thought that he could to clean up a mess as he saw it and to bring community action into a whole new realm. And, of course, when you overstep the bounds of what people have truly asked you to do, you are asking for a lot of trouble, and he's gotten into a lot of trouble by overstepping those bounds. I don't defend him, or I don't do any. You know, I'm not either way. I'm just pointing out that there are people who are called, who feel that they are gifted and called to do something big and to change society on a larger scale. And then there are people like me who just wanted to share love. So I think that we're all called to give at the rate, at the vibratory level, I guess I would say, that is really ours to give. And if we know ourselves well enough to know what we can give, and then we just give that our absolute unremitting joyful complete attempt. You know, I've done it all my life. I want to serve. I wake up in the morning and that's my goal. I want to serve. And that's my role. That's the role of the positively polarized person that I am in regard to activism. And it's a pitiful poor one if you look at activism as being in the realm of politics. If you look at activism as being in a larger realm, then all of us have the opportunity to do something really wonderful. And the question is, what are we called to do? If we're called to be a mom, then isn't that a service that no one but you can do? And if you really do a good job of it, and if at the end of it you produce a crop of healthy, well-adjusted kids who believe in themselves and are ready to take on the world, haven't you done a wonderful job? You know, I refuse to look at the scale of what it is that we're doing. And instead I want to look at how much of ourselves we put into it once we decide what it is we can do.
So funny that you brought up parenting, because that's actually what the next question is about. Before we wrap up this question, I'd just like to make a final note about how I think this question and questions like this sort of cut to the heart of third density, this being the yellow ray, true color yellow density. It is the density of social structures, and in contemplating this kind of question, obviously, us on the show, like Carla likes to say, we are bozos on the bus, and the most we can really hope is to offer more food for contemplation. This is really what we're here to contemplate and learn about and make our own decisions about. So our next question comes from Dale from the Bring Forth Forums. Dale asks, I feel that free will is so important for all things. It is our protection as well as our key to freely pursue a path unique to our own agenda. That being said, as a parent of 6 children, and one of them being autistic, how do you feel about parenting where you are constantly abridging the free will of children? Also, it has been a great pleasure to hear more from Jim. It is a great reference to hear what the scribe's viewpoints are regarding the Law of One and life in general. Blessings of a day to you all. Thank you, Dale.
What a lovely Dale. And since Jim has had some modicum of experience working with young children, when he was going for his master's degree at the University of Florida. Is that right?
Right.
I get University of Florida and University of Southern Florida mixed up. Anyway, why don't we start off with you, Mickey?
Well, it's obvious at some point that, you know, if you go back into the age of all children, that they can't take care of themselves. They have to have things done for them, feeding and clothing. And it moves into the area of teaching and helping to guide them along a certain path. And I guess as they get older, then is when you begin to be concerned about free will, because at some point they can take over the thinking for themselves and deciding what they believe and be more and more independent of having to have outside help to survive. And I think Ross said that the age of which, at which the child would take responsibility for its behaviors was something like 18 months, you know, less than 3 years old. So that's in the metaphysical sense. In the physical sense, as to when the child is able to do things, I think parents have to be aware of this growing need of the child to be able to stand on its own feet and to make its own decisions. But then that it's a hard thing to give up once you've had 10 or 12 or more years helping to raise a child and doing things for it that it couldn't do for itself. It's hard to give up the reins and let the child take them and to become its own authentic being. So that's the question. You know, when exactly are we infringing on free will and when are we not? And I think it probably varies for different children. Some children are much more precocious in their ability to think for themselves and to make rational choices or to be able to do for themselves what was formerly done for them. Somewhere around the age of puberty, I think, is probably picked as a arbitrary time. Graduation from high school is an obvious time when you're going off to college on your own. So somewhere in there, I would guess. What do you think, Rick?
Well, to me, there is a responsibility that parents have that continues throughout life. The parent is going to be the go-to person. I mean, if the parent has done a good job, it's going to be the go-to person for that child. And it's a matter of how you use your power. I think one of the main questions in life is how you use your power. Do you use your power well? Obviously, as you said, Mick, you have to teach your children how to tie their shoes, how to comb their hair, how to brush their teeth. There are reasons for doing these things. If you don't tie your shoes, you trip over them and hurt yourself. If you don't brush your teeth, then you end up losing them or having gum disease or both, and it is much to be desired not to have those things, and they're a perfectly good reason. So at a certain age, you can sit down and explain this to a child, but not a young child. You just say, brush your teeth, and then you make sure it's done. And it is a responsibility for you to do. You're helping that child stay healthy and comfortable in a world where there are a lot of crazy people and a lot of people these days. I mean, look at the issues, two big issues, sex and drugs. There is obviously a case to be made for a person being able to choose when he wants to engage in sexuality. On the other hand, there are cases to be made for teaching a child to be very choosy, not just about physical sexuality, but about any kind of closeness, because the challenges of a person in society today are more listening in the background. There is something going on, which my husband is taking care of, so don't worry about it. Anyway, there are more serious side effects that can happen to a person with drugs and with sex. When you are talking about sex, you're talking about sexual transmitted disease. You don't want your child to get a disease that could impinge upon his ability to have children later in life, whether he's a male or female. There are problems that come up if you have certain diseases, and they are very easy to get, and it only takes one time to get them. It's a terribly risky thing. If you're a woman, it's a tremendously risky thing to have sex, unprotected sex, because you can have a child that was not planned at a very young age if you don't protect yourself. So at the very minimum, you have to sit down and have a talk with your child and make sure the child has got a handful of condoms on him or her, and if it's a woman, has learned about what choices there are in terms of protection that women can use, whether or not a man is willing to use a condom. Some men are not willing to use one. That's very important. You've got a responsibility, and you can't simply say, well, my child is able to make his own decisions and able to take responsibility for what happens. The other thing is drugs. It only takes one overdose to kill you. Just one. The first time that you take drugs, you can die. It's happened. It's very dangerous. So you need to be able to talk to your kids on a very intimate, very deep level to protect them. And is it just for your good? No, it's for their good. So I think that what you need to do is to think about how you're using your power. If you're using your power simply because you want that child to be quiet, the child is irritating you and you want the child to be quiet, and so you give the child a hard time, you're not listening to the child, that's not a good way to use your power. You need to ask yourself, when you're getting ready to do something, tell your child to do something that will mean that you are infringing on his free will. Am I doing this so I can be more comfortable, or am I doing this so my child can be helped? And who am I helping here? And if the answer is I'm helping myself, that really doesn't cut it. That's not acceptable. So I think that's what you have to ask yourself. Now, with an autistic child, it's especially important to realize, and obviously you do, the special needs of an autistic child. Autistic kids, depending on the nature and the type of autism, can get themselves in a lot of trouble real quick. And a friend of mine who is autistic is constantly getting herself in trouble because she starts to do something and then she starts to do something else and then she starts to do, you know, it just, and then she gets herself in trouble because she's given herself responsibilities in several different realms, you know, with various people, and all of a sudden she's got three things to do and no way to do three things at once, and how is she going to satisfy three different people who are trusting, who are depending upon her, you know? So when you're working with an autistic or dyslexic or special needs child of any kind, you need to educate yourself as to what's going on with that kid and what the dangers are and so forth. And then you need to spend a little bit more time using your power than you would with another child. So that's my take on it. It's a question of how you use your power. You're going to have to use it. The question is, are you using it well? Austin, what do you think?
Well, we're actually coming up to the end of the show here. We only have a couple minutes left. Gary, did you have anything really quickly you wanted to add to that?
Not a parent myself, but I would, were I a parent, I would attempt to consider that, like a flower, we don't make a flower grow. We just help to provide some of the conditions within which the flower can grow, water, sunlight, protection from bugs, insects, and whatnot. So maybe that could be helpful in considering how best to parent. And in the cases where there is conflict between the child's interest and your own, and I think you have to say no sometimes. And then because, you know, parents are children too in their own, in maybe a figurative sense. So we're all trying to find our way. But, yep, that's it for me. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Gary. Off, I'd just like to give another quick mention to our two upcoming events, the Art of Healing Circle Retreat, March 21st through the 23rd here in Louisville. Beatrice Gonzalez will offer some seminars and a healing technique. It's both an opportunity for learning and healing. And our Archetypes Workshop coming up April 11th through the 13th, our friend Safira Vox will help guide a discussion of the mind. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week, and we'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and talk with you then.